Between the Rows podcast is brought to you by Glacier Farm Media and sponsored by FCC Ag Expert.
Hey, do you know what's new and improved? Ag Expert software.
What's that?
Ag Expert? It's field and accounting software designed for Canadian agriculture.
No, that's sparkle sound.
When I say Ag Expert?
Yeah, that.
Well, Ag Expert Field helps you manage your farm. And Ag Expert Accounting is the accounting software in Canadian agriculture. But it's so new and improved, it still has that sparkle to it.
Mm-hmm. Can I use it on my phone?
Of course. It's built for modern agriculture. Try it for free at agexpert.ca.
Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications.
Hi, and welcome to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Laura Rantz. By now, we're all getting a bit tired of talking about COVID-19 and the impact it's having on our daily lives. But it's becoming apparent that some of the adjustments that we've had to make will be lasting ones, and we're all learning how to navigate the new normal. For example, the cancellation of public events this year due to the ongoing health risks meant our parent company, Glacier Farm Media, would be unable to host our outdoor farm shows. So our team embarked on a great big experiment. We decided that if we couldn't bring farmers to our Ag in Motion show north of Saskatoon in July, we'd bring the show to farmers through a digital platform. So Ag in Motion Discovery Plus and Canada's Digital Farm Show were born. We've been super busy gathering up the elements we'd normally deliver live and figuring out how we can bring them to you in the comfort of your own home. Sorry, we still haven't figured out where to park the ice cream truck, but we have collected some interesting content to share with you, and I'm going to give you a sneak peek of that on today's Between the Rows. Our first item is an excerpt from a conversation I had with Wes Anderson, the Chief Fertility Specialist with CropPro Consulting. As a company that's been on the forefront of applying precision agriculture technologies to prairie crop farms, I wanted to hear how they're adjusting to the new normal in agriculture. Hi, Wes. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Now, I know that COVID-19 has certainly changed my business. How about yours?
Yeah, it's been a pretty big disruption for a lot of businesses. Actually, for our business, it hasn't been too big of a deal. We at CropPro, we have an office in Nakum. Hardly anybody works out of it. Most of us work out of our home, and we actually have a bit of a tagline in our business of that's your field is our office, right? So our staff are largely either just at home in their home offices during the winter, and in the summer, this time of year, primarily out in the field, already social distancing. So that part of it hasn't been a big deal. We also use a lot of technology already. We already were. It has forced us, or maybe more so our clients, to start using it a little more than what they were previously comfortable with. But I think in the long run, like you'd kind of mentioned, it's actually going to be a good thing, because once they get used to using it, I think they're going to find that they're going to have a tough time really going back. I mean, once they can get logged into the app, for example, that we use to share data with them and all that sort of thing, they're just going to continue to use it. Much like any technology, right? I mean, any of us, you think about, I mean, a lot of us have gone through the transition of the old MS Office, you know, right, programs, for instance, right? And then it changed to whatever the new versions were. I can't remember all the versions, right? And it was like, oh, wow, this is totally different. Initially, you go through that, I wish I could just go back to the old version, but at some point you get used to the new one. And I think that's, we're going through all that with COVID right now, right?
Well, we tend to think of this crisis in terms of it being a short-term thing. We keep talking about when things get back to normal, but it looks very much like we're entering a new normal, aren't we? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. And I think the more we sort of accept that and almost embrace it to some degree, I think the better off we'll be, and just learn how to function with maybe less face-to-face contact, right? And utilizing technology to its fullest, we're doing that right now using Zoom, right? Rather than us being at a live presentation at Ag in Motion at the outdoor show, which is unfortunate. But in reality, like at the end of the day, it does work, right? And we can still do it.
The analogy I keep referring to is if you go to a live hockey game versus watching it in your living room, both are very enjoyable experiences, but they're different experiences. And that's kind of what we're doing with the virtual farm show this year.
Yeah, that's an excellent example. For example, how we use sort of technology and get around a lot of face-to-face contact. I mean, our standard business is we're going out to map a field. So that's just with a truck. I mean, it's just a single person out on their own in a truck. The farmer doesn't have to be present there. That data is wirelessly transferred to a server that goes into a software program where a GIS specialist is sitting alone again in their home office, making maps. That syncs to an app. You know, again, it's all couldn't do any of this without the internet, of course. An agronomist, then a different person yet again, can see that data to ground truth the data in field, take soil tests right away. Those set tests are shipped to a lab. Then we use a software API to get that data from the lab back into our software platform. And then there are several options. So at the Ag in Motion Discovery Farm, for example, once I made the recommendation for the fertilizer, we, you know, logged into, in this case, it was the Seedhawks Icon system, which is a cloud where we can load up the prescription, and Blake could just get that prescription on an iPad, actually, right, to control the air drill. So there was absolutely no face-to-face contact for all that to happen. And that's a lot of stuff. And in amidst that, the farmer can start to see that data or share some of that data as well through the app or even just traditional email of sharing stuff. So,
and of course, as you mentioned at the beginning, this is all predicated on having internet access. And I think in some areas that continues to be a challenge. What are some of the other challenges we have to overcome in adapting to this environment?
Yeah, internet's a big one. And I mean, there's some workarounds. Like for example, our app there works, it does work offline. So that does help get around some of those issues. But yeah, I mean, as Rob Syke recently said, I think we can't have smart farms with dumb internet, and that it couldn't be truer. It's just a lot of this stuff is going to require connectivity in some way. But yeah, so I mean, there's that part of it, the whole less face-to-face contact and using data to overcome that. The other side of this whole thing that you alluded to earlier is just the general uncertainty in the global market, and we're in Canada, so susceptible to global market uncertainty, in particular because we're such a strong export company, right, or a country. So, you know, we rely on other countries buying our grain and beef, and you know, if all of a sudden there's a bunch of borders closing or tariffs being applied and all that, I mean, it all increases risk to farmers, and I think it's going to accelerate the need to innovate and reduce risk using technology more and more. And just, you know, really strive to improve the return on investment of every input that goes into the crop, essentially get more output with the same amount of inputs or perhaps the same output with less inputs, right? I guess however we can manage that, but regardless, that all I think takes technology like variable rate or imaging or whatever, right? I mean, there's lots of things that we can do now.
It seems to me that we've really focused in agriculture on yield as being equated with return on investment, but you make a really important point. If you can get the same output with fewer costs, that's a higher return on investment as well. And I'm just wondering if that equation has kind of shifted in the last little while.
Yeah, it all depends on the mindset. And I think it's very... It becomes very farm and even field specific, in fact. So I get like in our business, which primarily is variable rate fertility and managing fertility. There's fields where that maybe have a high amount of salinity, for example, where there's legitimately an opportunity to cut back inputs and save money, but still have the same output. Most of the time, I think there's an opportunity to apply the same amount of inputs, basically, but reallocate those dollars to areas of higher ROI across the farm, or, you know, within a field and across the farm, so actually increasing the output. And yeah, like you said, either way is better ROI, but it all depends really on the field and what's been traditionally being done. So
are there long-term changes? I mean, you as you mentioned, you've been doing a lot of this kind of work, you know, in terms of using data transfer and just the nature of your business. You don't need to have a lot of face-to-face contact, but do you see some long-term changes in other aspects of your business that will stick around?
Yeah, I mean, I think in the precision ag world, if we want to use that broad term, I mean, we see continuing opportunity to sort of increase the resolution, for lack of a better term, in the way we manage the crop. So we're getting more and more detailed and more site specific. And that comes not just with what we do, but the capability of equipment. Okay, so there's sprayers now on the market that can vary rates and stuff nozzle by nozzle. We have commercial seed drills that can variable rate fertilizer by the section. So every 8 or 10 feet of the drill can actually be applying a different rate of fertilizer. Okay, that gets to be a really, really high resolution. It's really exciting. I think in 5 to 10 years, for sure, we will be at a place where nobody will seed an area that is saline, for instance. Those saline areas, no matter how big or small they are, will be seeded down to a perennial forage grass and not be farmed, because you will lose money on those parts of the field all the time, right? But when we can start managing inputs almost by the square meter, really, at that sort of resolution, it'll start to allow us to be able to have, you know, I mean, some parts of Western Canada might have all sorts of these little grass patches in the middle of the field where there's salinity, right? Or maybe sodic soil or something. That's fine, right? It provides a native habitat to beneficial insects. As much as anything, it prevents you from losing money in those areas. And that's the important part.
It's really a triple win in that, you know, yes, as you say, it's increasing biodiversity. It's helping the farmer make more money by farming a little less.
Yeah.
And it's, I would suggest that it's possibly improving the relationship with non-farmers as well.
Yes. You took the words out of my mouth. And realistically, we have to start recognizing what consumers, our customers, are wanting and demanding.
That was Wes Anderson, Chief Fertility Specialist with Crop Pro Consulting. You can hear his full presentation by logging in to the Ag in Motion Discovery Plus platform July 21st to 25th. This is Between the Rows. I'm your host, Laura Rance. One of the contributions that our publication Grain News has brought to these events over the years was a farm equipment evaluations and reviews. In the past, we've done ATVs, telehandlers, and even taken a closer look at Kubota's M7 tractor. This year, we decided to check out those utility vehicles, also known as UTVs or side-by-sides, that we see showing up on farmyards across the country. To do this, we brought well-known machinery writer Scott Garby out of retirement to help us coordinate the challenge course. Scott's joining me now to tell us what happened. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Laura.
So just walk me through what the thinking was behind the kind of challenge we put these machines through.
Well, this year, the objective was to give farmers or any potential showgoer a chance to really have a feel for what these machines would offer. If someone had gone to the show, then they would have been able to just see it at a display. But we sort of went one step further and said, well, let's see what they can actually do, and we'll report on that rather than just taking a look at them as you would at a show. So we put together probably the toughest course we've ever put together for a challenge like this. And we had four machines participate in this, and we ran them through the course in several different ways, what we thought would be typical of how they would get used on the farm. And we tested a bunch of the features we think that we thought, or at least the performance characteristics that we thought would be important for farmers. So we had a very tough course. So we ran the machines through the course first, just empty. We just ran them through like you would drive around a farm field or farmyard, or in this case, a very tough trail.
So describe the course to me.
So we were about 45 minutes outside of Winnipeg, and we found probably some of the most rugged terrain for our off-road vehicle in Western Canada that I didn't even know existed in Manitoba like that. But so very along a riverbank, so very tight course trails that required a lot of maneuverability, a lot of up and down, which really put the horsepower and torque characteristics of the UTVs to the test. A lot of uphill climbing, downhill to test things like engine braking. And we also forded some streams to test for traction, and a lot of soft driving conditions. And of course, we got some high-speed driving conditions as well.
And you asked these machines, these utility vehicles, to carry a load as well, did you not?
Yeah, we did. So we had a standard load of roughly 500 pounds with two operators in the up front. And we ran the machines through the same course again, although we didn't try some of the softer ground, with the heavier load to see how the unloaded performance of the machine compared to when we had a load on that was near their rated maximum specification. And then we hooked up a trailer behind them and we pulled a loaded trailer. So we had a really good, we got a really good feel for how these machines handled in normal driving and just how far they could be pushed on the farm to do a lot of the farm chores or a lot of tasks on the farm that farmers might ask them to do.
Now, I was really, I was quite frankly surprised at the sticker price on some of these pieces of machinery or pieces of equipment, and they're not cheap to buy. What purpose do they serve on a typical farm?
Well, you're right, they're not cheap. In fact, you could probably get a reasonably good used four-wheel drive pickup truck for about the same price as you're getting one of these machines. But over the years, what I've seen as manufacturers have brought continually updated models to the market is these machines got closer to what a full size or what a pickup might offer in terms of specifications. Of course, not quite as much, but because they're much smaller. And of course, in most provinces, they're not road legal. So they offer reasonably good load carrying and towing capacity, although it's not going to compare with a pickup truck, of course, you're just not going to get that level of performance out of them. But with the small size that you're getting a fairly powerful machine that's got very good traction, which can get you in and out of some very tight places. And probably one of the tasks that comes to mind that where they would really excel at would be at fencing or fence repair. Trees tend to grow up along fence lines over the years, so getting in and out of those places where a pickup truck might not get to these machines.
Yeah, I was just wondering how would a pickup truck have handled the course that we put those utility vehicles through?
Yeah, we wouldn't have got a pickup truck in there at all because the course was so tight and required such maneuverability that we couldn't have got a regular on-road vehicle through there. So that's really where these machines shine is in their off-road capabilities.
So which manufacturers had pieces of equipment in this challenge?
So we had one of Kubota's newest, which is a machine that we've not had a chance to test before when we were doing the grain news reviews. We had tested Kubota's other side-by-sides that have been around for a while, but this is a newer entry that they have to the market. We had for the first time one from Bobcat, one of theirs. We had a Mahindra, again, first time for us testing one of those. And we had a fairly familiar one that we have tested before when it was first introduced in Texas. We tested it there. That was the Can-Am Defender with the long wheelbase. Pretty good range of machines there for us to take a look at.
Without disclosing any secrets or findings, I mean, generally, were you impressed with the lineup that we had?
Yeah, I was. The thing that I think a lot of consumers don't think about with these machines is they're not all the same. Some are obviously kind of sporty. You might compare it to a sports car, while others maybe more handling characteristics like you might imagine a sort of a pickup truck as comparing a sports car to a pickup truck in sort of that way of thinking. All of these machines all excelled at different areas of the tasks we put them to. So that was one of the things we're going to be able to tell viewers or explain to them is where each of these machines we found shines and does its and performs best.
This video and these reports will be rolled out this summer in July with the Ag in Motion Discovery Plus program, July 21st to 25th. Scott, what would you say to people in terms of encouraging people to maybe take that in?
If you're in the market for one of these machines, or you could foresee yourself being in the market for one at some time in the future, I think looking at evaluations like this are by far the best sort of market research you could do. Because if you go to a dealership, it's unlikely you're going to get the kind of access to these machines that we got. So if you don't know that much about a particular machine, when you go to look to buy one, you might end up with one that really doesn't match the needs that you're going to put it to on the farm. So if you watch like what we've done, where we've taken all these four machines and shown you what each one is best at, that could save you a lot of frustration down the road if you bought one and found it didn't excel at the kind of tasks you wanted to do with it.
Well, thanks very much, Scott, for joining me today.
Thanks, Laura. It was my pleasure.
That was Scott Garvey, the former machinery editor for Grain News. We hope you'll log in to the Ag in Motion Discovery Plus July 21st to 25th to see for yourself how these machines performed. Our last item this week is our regular look at the markets. This time, I'm joined by Marlo Glass, a reporter with Glacier Farm Media's Markets Farm Division. Hi, Marlo.
Hi, Laura. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's great to hear from you. I was just, I noticed that there's been some new reports out today, or this week at least. Let's start with Stats Can. What's the story behind the numbers there?
So Statistics Canada released their updated acreage estimates yesterday, and the numbers were largely in line with market expectations. Total canola area for the current growing year was pegged at 20.7 million acres, which is at the higher end of trade estimates, but still slightly below the 20.9 million acres that we saw seeded last year. One thing that stuck out for market participants is the total wheat area, which is now forecast at 24.9 million acres, and that's lower than previous estimates by about 500,000 tons.
Well, that's interesting because the USDA report was out today too, and they were also talking about low wheat numbers. What's happening there?
That's correct. So the wheat acres in the U.S. are the lowest on record since 1919 at 44.3 million acres. Now, there are a couple of theories surrounding that. One of them is that, of course, in Canada, when we had kind of challenging spring planting weather and kind of issues from the fall spilling into the springtime as well, some people decided to plant crops that have shorter growing seasons like barley instead of wheat. And so that could be one reason beside it.
And in the U.S., I think they're just more interested in corn and soybeans from an economic perspective, are they? Or
that's just it. Yeah, it's a dollars and cents thing as well.
So now that the markets have had these reports, they've been on the radar, now they know what's in them, what will people be turning to now to take some direction for pricing?
Well, now that we have a bit of a better idea about planted acreage, markets will be largely turning their attention to growing conditions. As you know, that there have been storms that brought heavy rains and hail across the Canadian prairies over the past few days. Right. The rain in Manitoba was mostly concentrated in the Brandon area, or the western part of the province, and over 160 millimeters fell in less than 24 hours.
Wow.
So we already know that there was significant overland flooding in some areas, but we're not yet sure of the extent of the damage done to the crops.
And there's more storms on the way.
That's correct. There's more coming, but it is expected to clear up over the weekend.
So generally speaking then, are the conditions pretty reasonable out there across the prairies for growing conditions?
That's correct, yeah. Of course, last year, producers were struggling with dry conditions. We don't seem to be having that problem this year. We've been getting pretty steady rain across the prairies. There are some pockets that could use a little bit more rain, but generally speaking here in Canada, we're in pretty good shape for a good growing season. And of course, that may very well end up keeping pressure on prices. As well, the forecast for the U.S. Midwest and the Corn Belt is conducive to very good growing conditions. And so that's also expected to keep some pressure on corn prices as well.
Well, thanks very much for joining me today, Marlo.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was Marlo Glass, who writes for Markets Farm. That's all we have for you on this week's Between the Rows, but we'll be back again next week. I hope you'll join us. I'm your host, Laura Rantz.
Between the Rows podcast is brought to you by Glacier Farm Media and sponsored by FCC Ag Expert, Canada's number one field and accounting software. Try it for free at agexpert.ca.
Hey, do you know what's new and improved? Ag Expert software.
What's that?
Ag Expert? It's field and accounting software designed for Canadian agriculture.
No, that's sparkle sound.
When I say Ag Expert?
Yeah, that.
Well, Ag Expert Field helps you manage your farm. And Ag Expert Accounting is the accounting software in Canadian agriculture. But it's so new and improved, it still has that sparkle to it.
Mm-hmm. Can I use it on my phone?
Of course. It's built for modern agriculture. Try it for free at agexpert.ca.